Thanks, Chuck. That I think we'll have an opportunity for questions and discussions afterwards. Certainly, Chuck's assertion that the concern about overreaction, I think, is probably worthy of some comments, because this, to me, looks like a fairly preemptive program. So with that, we're going to go to Tom Locke from the Energy Savings Trust in the UK, and he's going to talk about their response to enforcement and verification challenges in a voluntary program.
Thank you, Chris. Is that YouTube?
Yeah, that's great stuff, yeah. This must be you. That must be you too. The rest is on the cursors.
On
if
cursors.
You're happy, or that button, that bottom button.
I use cursors. Lovely. Thank you, John. Hello, everybody. I'm just going to be sharing some of our MVE experiences we've had on our Energy Saving Trust recommended scheme. We've recently rebranded the scheme, so for those really familiar, it used to be the Energy Saving Recommended Scheme. It's the same scheme, we've just added the word trust in. Consumers didn't quite know who was recommending the products to them, so they now do know. So a little bit about the trust before I talk about our MVE experiences. Been running since 1993. We are an independent and impartial organisation helping consumers to reduce their carbon dioxide emissions in the UK. We're a not-for-profit organisation. We are currently publicly funded, although I'm sure that mix is changing over the next few months. And I'll talk a little bit about how we're trying to, or we are generating revenue for membership fees and product certification fees in our Energy Saving Trust recommended scheme. In terms of the scheme, it was launched in the year 2000, so we're celebrating our 10th birthday this year. It's an at-a-glance, best-in-class, energy-in-use, voluntary product labelling scheme. We aim to reduce carbon dioxide emissions and signpost the best-performing products to consumers and thereby transforming the market and helping to stimulate the sales of best-in-class products. The disciplines we have within the team: certification, which is the team I manage. We have a marketing team as well to help educate the consumer on the scheme to create that consumer recognition. And we have an account management team as well for some of our large manufacturers and retailers. We don't have huge marketing budgets, but some of our members do, so we try to leverage in as much as we can for as little spend as we can. And the account management works very, very well. We have just under 300 members, about 3,000 certified products. We used to have 30 standards, and the threes worked very well then. We've now got 31. We're trying to generate more and more. We do product conformity testing, and we monitor the usage of the label in store, in press, newspapers and magazines, and online as well. The product conformity testing, we test at least 5% of the products that we certify. So that's around 150 products a year. I'll talk more about that in a moment. But in terms of the voluntary context, John mentioned it a bit from the outset, we do enforce, obviously, correct usage of the label and enforce the results we get from the product conformity testing, but it's to a degree. It's not a regulatory scheme, it's a voluntary scheme. So we obviously can, and we do, deregister products and deregister our members. And we do legally enforce correct use of the trademark. But to leverage up greater usage of the results, we also work with DEFRA, have a UK compliance network, which brings together lots of different bodies doing testing. We write to DEFRA with all of our results and attend those meetings and share the results as well. So it's just a bit of a sort of voluntary context on the activities we do. A little bit about how we certify a product before we go into how we test a product. In order to become a member of the scheme, there are certain company requirements you need to fulfill. The evaluators in the certification team have competencies in quality management system assessment. We're all 9001 certified lead auditors. So in order for manufacturers and suppliers to become members of the ESTR scheme, they must have an effective quality management system, and they must have product liability insurance in place. Product liability insurance, should the product go wrong, we want to make sure the consumer, as we are recommending the products to them, has a level of protection. Once the members of the scheme, cut across the 31 different product categories. We have a mixture of approval onto the scheme via either an independent third-party assessment or by a supplier's declaration of conformity. We have a prevalence and a de facto for all new standards that we create that approval is based on an independent third-party conformance of the product's performance. We do have a number of products, standards that were introduced early on in the scheme. It was based on a supplier's declaration of conformity. And for those, we follow the ISO guidance for those SDOCs to make sure that we follow as best practice as we can. And there's a certain amount of feedback from our product testing as well. If the method of approval onto the scheme doesn't match the results that we're getting, we can feedback and change how we're doing that. I'll give an example of that in a moment. We want to make sure the consumer is not misled by the products they see displaying the label, so we monitor the usage of the label, as I said, online, in store, and in press. Why else do we do it? Well, if we're not checking the people who aren't using it, or who are using it, who shouldn't be, why do we expect members to pay a fee to become a member if you can get away with it for free as well? In terms of trends, we generally see about 50 instances of misuse a quarter. Those people typically misusing it are generally installers, heating installers, glazing installers. It's not an installer accreditation scheme, so they've got no, whether or not they're selling or installing certified product, they've got no opportunity to use it. They're not licensed to use it. The certification doesn't cover how products are installed. But you often see it perhaps on a man in a van. Unfortunately, one of those vehicles parked outside the headquarters of EST a couple of years ago, not realizing quite where they parked. So with the invention of cameras on phones, it's become really helpful. I often get emails sent on a Monday where someone's been out in store at the weekend and found a product labeled and wanted to check it's correct. We've had a recent influx of aqua-related misuse. ESTR hot tubs, had a couple of those manufacturers recently, and ESTR swimming pools. Obviously, people using the mark unauthorized and obviously incorrectly. So we do invoke our protection we have for the trademark. Energy Saving Trust recommended as a registered certification mark, so we do enforce any infringement of the mark. There is an escalation procedure that ultimately if the company infringing our mark doesn't accept our correspondence, we will issue a solicitor's letter, a few hundred pounds. Doesn't matter how many times you ask them to do it and change the name at the top, it's still a few hundred pounds. But once a legal letter arrives in the inbox, that generally galvanizes attention and the misuse does end. In terms of the product testing we do, we have a budget at the moment of around £130,000 to £150,000 a year from our funders currently this year of DEC, the Department for Energy and Climate Change in the UK. And we've got a target to test, as I said, at least 5% of certified product. Our budget this year went down in line with the general reduction in public finance. However, my target in operating the scheme went up to 10%. So we've got to negotiate a bit harder with some of our testing authorities. So thank you to my manager for that. We have been testing products for a number of years. We have different criteria on which we select our products on an annual basis. But going back through the years, we do find generally a high level of conformity for our televisions that we certify. We are endorsing the best-in-class products as a sort of cachet on that. But generally a very high, and when I say high, I mean sort of plus 90% of the products we test do conform to our requirements. Large domestic appliances, they vary in their levels of conformity. This year's testing, they did actually have a very high level of conformance. That's different from previous years, where it has fluctuated quite a bit. And light fittings, so that's your compact fluorescent lamp, luminaires, ones dedicated only take luminaires. We've experienced a really worrying level of conformity, such that we're going to be changing our entry requirements for product certification onto the scheme, which is, I mentioned about this feedback loop. You select the method you're going to use to approve the product. You test the product. If you find worrying levels of conformity, you can feed that back to how you approve the products in the first place. In terms of when we find non-conformities in product testing, we generally automatically opt for deregistration of the product. Sometimes the manufacturers will challenge the results. Sometimes we'll go for a retest of the product. I can talk a bit more of the minutiae of the detail perhaps after the presentation on that. But generally, the products are moved for deregistration and product testing. And as I mentioned at the beginning, we are introducing charging. The funding landscape in the UK for publicly financed delivery bodies is changing rapidly. We decided midway through last year that we were going to be introducing membership fees and product certification fees. And basically, the numbers are up there. If you're a new member wanting to join, it's £375, and there's an annual renewal of £275. The costs, most of the costs come in the product certification. There is a ceiling, so no company will pay more than £15,000 a year on product certifications, plus your membership, so no more than £15,275. We consulted, as I said, for 6 to 9 months on that, and the general feedback was kind of one of acceptance. They drew the link very clearly between what they were reading in the papers and about the change in public finance and kind of accepted that they'd had it free for 10 years and that things needed to be changed and they knew we weren't bluffing. A staggered introduction, we introduced the membership fees in May this year, so we have been charging renewals and new memberships since May, and the product certification fees will come in October, next month, obviously. That product certification is for the lifetime of the product. There's no annual renewal on that. And it's interesting to see what will happen to conformity levels. It's interesting to see what will happen when those deregistration notices come through on product testing, when you've had to pay those product certification fees. So could we see conformity levels rise for products with perhaps more pre-certification submission checks done on the products? For fear of losing the product certification fees. And we might have, if we're very successful, or when we're very successful, more money to spend on testing, because we will be looking to recoup our full operating costs within 18 months. And if we exceed our targets, we'll have more money to decide on what to spend in operating the scheme. So potentially we might have more money for product certification. And that's it. Thank you very much. Wanted to keep it fairly light, quite top. Obviously, you've got a lot of detail. Happy to take questions or now or afterwards or at the bar. Thank you.
So we have a bit of time for Tom. Any immediate questions, clarifications, or something that we want to raise later on? I guess one of the points that I've got out of this, Tom, is that it would be interesting to see how the industry values things when they start to
sure.
pay.
Yeah.
You only value what you pay for. Maybe those marginally certifiable products are not going to be produced, so it's going to be interesting to see the impact on the listings.
We've had to re-register all of our 300 members against the new charges. So we've generally seen most of those companies stay with us on the company fees.
Mm-hmm.
A small number of sort of independent electrical retailers have decided not to. I guess their operating budgets are quite a lot smaller. But generally, people are trying to maximise the cap. A lot of the larger manufacturers, they'll register a lot more than 15 products a year. So you kind of, once you pass that ceiling,
right.
It becomes a lot more cost effective to register more and more products.
Mm.
The cost per product certification gets reduced the more products you certify. So we're confident a lot of the pushback is now on, well, if we're going to be paying for it, market it better. Get more consumer recognition for the label. It's currently at 39%.
Right.
We've had feedback that says you can double your costs, you can triple your costs. If you're going to see a sort of a 10 percentage point increase on your consumer recognition, we'll pay a lot more money.
So are you saying that you're seeing firms marketing the fact that the product is verified? Is it trust in the logo thing?
They're laying down their expectations.
Right.
They said, okay, you've introduced charging. Now what are you going to do? Are you going to ring-fence that money? Or is it going to be used to prop up the rest of the energy saving? There is sort of a couple of hundred people that work for the trust, 30 or 40 different programs. This is just one of the programs,
right.
And we're one of the only ones introducing fees
right.
to our members. So a lot of the rest of the trust is funded directly by the government and deliver programs for consumers. So what are you going to do? You're going to prop up the rest of the trust, or you're going to keep it ring-fenced within the program
right.
and spend it advertising the products that we've submitted to you for certification? So.
Apparently the product suppliers would have a view on that.
Absolutely. They make that clear.
Great.
Okay.
Any other questions?
My name is Chris Evans. I'm a
with a company called Consumer Research Associates, and I work for the UK's Market Transformation Programme. Tom, on your slides, I think you talked about compliance checks about the 5% level. I wonder if you could expand a bit on the kind of risk analysis that you presumably undertake to determine where you're going to spend your money.
Sure. There are a number of different factors we decide on. We have 31 different product categories. The budget isn't large enough to test all 31 each year, so we have to decide where we're going to spend the money. We look back at previous compliance test results from previous years to see if the trends are upward or downward. We look at some of our high-profile areas where consumers particularly value the certification. So we endorse products from the heating sector, the glazing sector, insulation, lighting, your domestic appliances, your consumer electronics, and what do they typically rely on our certification for as well. We make sure that over a certain number of years we do get round that 31 as well. But I would say it's particularly how products have fared in previous years where there are low levels of conformity, for example, those luminaires. We've tested those on concurrent years to see how far the poor level of conformity is. That helps.
Okay, can I add this up? You just mentioned luminaires as being a particular corporate area, but Tom, given your experience and given that perhaps some colleagues in the room have less experience in this field than you, and they're coming into it quite new in terms of knowing where to spend perhaps some of their monitoring money, what tips would you give them? Where would you think that, from your experience, might be, shall we say, in terms of finding culprits rather than good behaviour, where might you advise people look?
Sure. I guess it's that the health warning is that we endorse the best-in-class products, so we're not going after the tail, so to speak, where you might find more levels of non-conformity. We don't sort of cherry pick products. When we select a product category for testing, we do a random stratified sample, so we make sure that the proportion of certified products reflects the proportion of tested products in that category as well. So I guess the results we see are randomly generated from that area. And another sort of health warning is that all the different sectors react differently. I mean, the consumer electronics industry or the large domestic appliances industry might take product conformity, might be more experienced at the testing that's done on their products, and might develop better practices. And we've seen an example today of the industry trying to take the lead in that area. Whereas you might look at other industries like glazing, for example, and see, well, those sorts of bodies aren't at a conference like this. They're not typically used to people testing them. There are 12,000 glazing manufacturers in the UK. It's very regional, so they wouldn't quite expect it. But in glazing, we did an audit trail review of their certification, and they came out very good. I think there's quite a high published varying degree of conformity on domestic appliances. I think if you look at the MTP website, you'll see they've published a lot of that. This year we found a high level of conformity actually in that area. So time will tell whether it's like that or whether it was like that. We'll see this year and next year and the year after. But I tried to give some examples there where consumer electronics televisions, we found a very high level of conformity. I've mentioned that domestic appliances, lighting. Hopefully that will help.